Hello neighbours, welcome to Fit to Eat, the Newfoundland Labrador Farm and Food Show. I'm Ivan Emke, your host. This is episode 17 of season 2. Today we head to Iceland for a couple of chats, just to see how things related to food and agriculture and rural in general are going there since COVID rearranged many of our plans. We meet up, virtually, with Dorothea Ármann of Frida Ármann, where they produce tomatoes, cucumbers, and fine horses and operate a very popular restaurant in one of their greenhouses. Then we visit with Hjalti Johannesson, who works at a rural research center on the campus of the University of Akureyri in the north-central region of Iceland. Akureyri, it's about 100 kilometers from the Arctic Circle, but it's much like Cornerbrook in Newfoundland and Labrador, and the University of Akureyri has similarities to the Grenfell campus of Memorial University, so I've always felt right at home there.
One really important factor for us was to keep all our staff. And we think of the staff as the heart of our company, and we didn't want anyone to go.
There was a campaign supported by the government to stimulate buying of local.
We were growing 20% of the Icelandic market before, and now we are expecting to double it to 40%.
Iceland is actually very urbanized, but only 6% of the population lives in strictly rural areas.
Frida Ármann is a delightful experience. If you ever go to Iceland, I'd recommend that you put it on your list. It's in the community of Reykholt, but make sure that it is the Reykholt in South Iceland, not the one in West Iceland, just a small detail there. On almost every day of the year, they invite the public in between noon and 4 p.m. to see their greenhouses, eat in the restaurant, hang out with the horses, watch one of the displays of the five gates of the Icelandic horse, and check out the shop. Using the sometimes fickle magic of Zoom, I talked with Dorothea, the daughter of Knutar Ármann, and Helena, her Munder daughter, the couple who started building their vision for Frida Ármann in 1995.
My name is Dorothea, and I am working in Frida Ármann. I'm the oldest daughter of Knutur and Helena, actually, and I work there as a project manager, and I have been working there all my life, basically.
Well, I guess you grew up there.
I did, yeah. Yes. Among the tomatoes.
When I've been there, it's always been so crowded and busy, like almost every day of the year, buses and people and so on. What does it look like these days?
These days, during the weeks, it is quite calm. We have some guests and we are open, and we have stayed open the whole time. That has been like a motto to us, to be there, but of course follow every rule that is set for the country. And sometimes we have had restrictions of 10 people, 15, 20, 50, 100, I don't know. We have had many rules this year. But now, currently, we have the rule of the maximum 20 people in the same area. And we could separate the areas in two. So we have 40 people maximum in our restaurant. And during weekdays, it's quite calm. We have some guests. And during weekends, it's super busy, actually. It's slowly starting again to be busy. But for the past months, it has been really strange situation.
A year ago, how many people would have come through your restaurant about every day?
In average, it was around 500 to 600 people. And now per day during weekends, now in January, for example, it's around 80 to 100 guests probably.
How did you adjust to the regulations when they came, well, last March or whatever? What changed on the farm?
COVID started in the end of February, beginning of March, and the amount of tourists just dropped in, I don't know, 1 week or something. Of course, we were really shocked, like other people, but we decided to use this as an opportunity because we are so lucky that our business is twofold on the tourist side and then the greenhouses, of course, for growing the tomatoes. And for the past years, the main focus has been on the tourist side, just because it has been so busy there and we have just been keeping up with the growth, basically. Last year, 2/3 of the income was from the tourism sector and 1/3 from the greenhouses. And we had started to think that we wanted to even it out, but we just didn't have more space to build more greenhouses. So when we didn't have any tourists anymore, we wanted to focus on more greenhouses, basically. And then also one really important factor for us was to keep all our staff, because 2/3 of our staff was working in the tourism sector. And we think of the staff as the heart of our company, and we didn't want anyone to go. So to be able to do that, we contacted our next door neighbors, who we had heard that were willing to sell their land. And we were so lucky that they wanted to do that. And we bought it in April and started building in May. So things happened really quickly. And we asked our staff if they were willing to move a little bit in their job roles. Since we had no tourists, they didn't have anything to do in their roles there. And they were willing to help us out building the new greenhouses. So that has been our main focus for the past year, along with keeping the restaurant open, of course, for those who want to come. But we have had chefs building greenhouses, and the restaurant managers, bookkeepers, and everyone has been helping out. And it has actually made our team of staff much closer, and also kind of like taught everyone how to work with greenhouses and plants and everything. So now kind of everyone knows how to do everything.
Maybe some of the chefs won't want to go back to the kitchen.
We have asked them and they are looking forward to going okay. back to the kitchen, but they also like doing something else for a little while. And we are really thankful for all our staff that they were willing to make this change, because it's of course not easy for everyone. So now when we are hoping to go slowly out of COVID, we have still all our staff who are ready to jump in their roles when the time comes. And we have doubled the size of the greenhouses. So now we will double the production of tomatoes.
I suppose you're selling wholesale or retail at this point, since you don't have as many people coming into the restaurant. Has that arm of the business really grown?
Yes, we were growing 20% of the Icelandic market before, and now we are expecting to double it to 40%. We just picked our first tomatoes out of the new houses last Friday.
So that it was being built in April, May, throughout that time. And so within less than a year, you've got product.
Yeah, 9 months, just like a pregnancy.
A lot of work, just like a pregnancy too. Yeah. You do some mail order already. Did that increase?
People, especially in Iceland, were ordering much more in mail. And we also started to sell our vegetables online. So you can order that online and then just come picked up at our place. Yeah. And we saw a big increase in that. Yeah.
Is there a piece of music that I can use sort of in the background? Something that plays in the greenhouse or something that you like or whatever?
We don't have any music playing in the greenhouses.
Okay. The tomatoes don't like it?
They probably do. But like the workers are just listening to their own thing. Yeah. Mostly books, I have heard. And then we want the guests in the restaurant just to feel comfortable and like chapter. Yeah. Let me see if I can find any tunes about tomatoes or plants or something.
The tomato grower song.
Yeah. Hér á reykjær margur órið andinn, úr því fer að skyggja á jökulsvett. Grotti leiði drösurinn minn, bjúur verður síðasti áfanginn. Grotti leiði drösurinn minn, bjúur verður síðasti áfanginn. Í tóa, þurran vitt og glóði væta nó eða líka einhver var að hóa undarlega dyrum kalla róm útilegum menn í ódáða raun eru kannski að smala fjö á laun útilegum menn í ódáða raun eru kannski að smala fjö á laun. Útilegum menn í ódáða raun eru kannski að smala fjö á laun. Útilegum menn í ódáða raun eru kannski að smala fjö á laun. Ríðum, ríðum, rekum yfir sandinn, rökkrið er að síga á herður breið.
Álfa drottning er að hvísla gandinn Ekki gott að verð á hennar leið Vænsta klárin vil ég gefa til að vera komin ofan í kýðagýr
Alas, I couldn't find an Icelandic tomato growing ballad. Instead, this was one of the best known songs about Icelandic horses. I'm sure you picked that up. It's called Aspringsandi, and it was done by Helgi Hermansen, Herman Ingi Hermansen, and Smari Egertsen. Look up their video, it goes with the song. It includes some grand Viking era clothing and some intriguing taxidermy. Now, we head back to our conversation with Dorothea at Fritimar, the restaurant, year round tomato growing greenhouse facility, and horse farm.
So how big is the greenhouse that you added?
Yeah, well, we had 5,400 square meters of greenhouses before, and now we are up to 11,000.
When people came as well, they would come and watch the horse show and so on. Now, I suppose that's another thing that changed with fewer people there.
Yes, the horses have gotten really nice rest these few months, and they are actually quite fast now. So we are starting to train them again now for the upcoming season.
Yeah. How have other businesses as well been able to weather this? Because in that area, that Golden Circle and so on, there are a number of businesses like you that relied on regular visitors every day.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, it has, of course, been difficult for us and for other companies as well. The government has tried its best to help these companies out. So they have helped with paying salaries and offered some loans and so on. So it has been made a little bit easier. And then, of course, some are just waiting to operate again. Been using this downtime to improve their processes. And because this, of course, has given people time to think what they can do better and have to improve.
Here in Canada and Newfoundland and Labrador as well, there's been a sense that people appreciate local food more since COVID. They understand that the food chain is a fragile thing sometimes. Is that what's happened in Iceland as well? Do you think the population is more sympathetic toward local food?
Yes. Well, as I said, people have gotten really time to think what they are thankful for and what they appreciate. And I think that is one of the things. And we can see that people are really thankful when they come into our restaurant, for example, and it's open in these strange times. And they are just grateful for getting out and having something local to go to.
So your tomatoes in the stores are branded. Everybody knows it comes from your operation.
That's right. We marked every box or packets with our logo. Yeah. And then we also put a picture of my parents on one of our tomato brands because they are the only ones, or we are the only ones growing them in Iceland. So, and also because Iceland is such a small country that everyone kind of knows everyone. To see the faces on the packets and then you can connect like, I know them. I went to visit them.
Did you have any trouble getting inputs? Like, I know you might have to ship in certain things. Was that a problem during COVID?
In the beginning, a little bit, but it did not affect us really badly. Things have been going really smoothly compared to how strange this situation is. So we can't really complain.
Did people in Iceland start growing more gardens in their backyards and so on?
I think so. Well, I have not seen any numbers, but just seeing pictures on Facebook and talking to friends, this summer everyone was growing something and people were like sending us email on how to grow tomatoes in their living room and more doing things themselves and getting closer to nature. Yeah. And then the sourdough bread was really a big hit in Iceland. I don't know if that was in other countries, but everyone was baking their own sourdough bread.
Right. Was it hard to get yeast and or flour?
It was actually, out of order for a few weeks, I think.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting when people are in stress and they go to cooking as one of the ways to get back.
Yeah, exactly. It's really nice, I think. People are closer to what feels important and what like makes them calm again.
After COVID, whatever happens, you're going to do some things slightly differently, maybe. I mean, you obviously have a different market mix because you have more retail and so on. So I guess what I'm getting at is that there are some positive things.
Yeah, we have been trying to look only at the positive things and then learn from the negative ones, of course. And yeah, we will have more tomatoes to sell, of course. And we are adding more staff now to our greenhouses to help out with that. And then we have also been looking at what we can do better in our tourism sector, because we are, of course, hoping that people will come back to Iceland and will want to visit us again like before. And we are going to host them better than ever, basically.
If anybody's never been there before, this is the time to go. Once you're allowed to go, yes. Well, thanks for taking a few minutes here. And it's really great to have an update. And it's inspiring. You're very lucky that you have such a great staff. But you also had very good principles there in terms of making sure that they didn't have to leave. I look forward to my next visit.
I look forward to it, too. Yeah. Thank you for calling.
All the best. Take care.
Yeah, bye. Bye-bye.
If you want to know more about Friedheimar, hop on the internet and go to friedheimar.is. My next guest, Hjalti Johannesson, works at a research center located on the University of Akureyri campus. In Akureyri, which is located on the stunning Eyjafjörður fjord, I've had the pleasure of meeting up with him a number of times and always enjoy his insight into the dynamics of rural Iceland, which we often compare with the rural regions of, places like Newfoundland, Labrador, and beyond.
I should get you to say your name, because I would not pronounce it correctly.
Hjalti Johannesson.
Hjalti Johannesson.
Yeah. My organization is a research center at the University of Akureyri, and we deal with rural development and several other things that we are carrying out for both the university itself and the larger community.
So rural development is an issue in Iceland as well as in Newfoundland and Labrador.
Oh, yes, very much so. 2/3 of the population live in the Reykjavik area, mm-hmm. and even if we extend that to a commuting area of 45 minutes or so, then we have 80% living there.
Has COVID changed life in rural Iceland?
It has, yes, like in all other places. For example, the tourism, which really took off around 2011, it kind of went away during 2020.
You've had cruise ships there as well, and I assume that stopped.
Oh, yes. We have many cruise ships. You can have 3 or 4 cruise ships at the same time here in Akureyri, with several thousand on each of them. And this is a town of 20,000.
The town population would swell between 9 and 3.
Yeah.
You had a campaign of sort of stay at home or staycation or whatever, like what happened in Newfoundland and Labrador, all across Canada. Did Icelanders start to get out and kind of discover their own country a little bit more?
Last summer. There was a boom in this because people couldn't go anywhere. Yeah. And I'm quite sure that when these restrictions will be lifted, people will go abroad as much as possible. So, yeah, last summer was very busy. This was noticed primarily in rural Iceland because all this population in the southwest, they went to visit other places.
Because you folks have to go into Reykjavik for various things once in a while. You're not going to necessarily go there for a vacation.
Not so much. And we don't weigh that much because we are so few in comparison.
In terms of food, were there gaps in terms of rural areas? Were there shortages during the pandemic?
No, never shortages of anything. People were hamstering.
Stockpiling.
For example, toilet paper. But
yes,
in the beginning, but yeah. Kind of irrational behavior.
It is. Did people have a different view of local food or having access to local food? Is all some places that became a hot topic or whatever?
Probably to some degree. There was a campaign supported by the government to stimulate buying of local and Icelandic in general, and also to stimulate the economy during the downswing. So yes, to a certain degree.
Did people grow gardens more than they did usually?
It has been a trend for the past few years now. It really began after the crisis of 2008, the credit crisis, and it has continued.
They have backyard gardens and so on.
And special gardens that the community provides, or the municipality. It's also a social thing. You can go there and chat to the person with the small garden next to yours and so on.
Right. Like sometimes people don't realize the value of agriculture for rural development, like that it's a sort of a key part of rural development. Does the government, do they understand that relationship between making sure that we still have farmers out in the countryside and development in that area?
Not quite sure about that. There's some understanding of this, but I think as we get more and more urbanized, this understanding gets less and less. Iceland is actually very urbanized. Only 6% of the population lives in strictly rural areas.
Has rural Iceland been affected more than the 2/3 who live down by Reykjavik?
No, not necessarily, I think.
Have your restaurants stayed open?
Yeah, usually they just take every other table out of business and so on. And you have to wear masks when you come in and take care of sanitation and so on.
It's been a good year for the hand sanitizer business.
Yeah, actually, I think some breweries.
Oh, they
provided some material for this.
Right. Well, they're set up to make alcohol. That's a big component in it, I guess.
Yeah.
In terms of the economics of the country, were there job losses, or have there been job losses?
Oh yes, yeah. Very much. So the unemployment, I'm not quite sure about the number, but it's very high, and even higher than it was in the credit crisis. And the different geographical pattern, because it's the tourism mainly, and the situation is quite bad, especially close to the international airport in Keflavik and vicinity.
Has rural Iceland been affected more, well, than the two-thirds who live down by Reykjavik?
No, not necessarily, I think. The south has been quite badly hit, for example, tourist regions as Lake Mývatn area, mm-hmm. close to Akureyri. And also, one thing is that we have had very many foreign workers in the tourism business,
okay.
and they have been particularly badly hit.
Is tourism starting to come back?
Not yet. No, because there's a lot of screening on the borders. And
so it's probably possible to actually get into the spas these days, not have to reserve weeks in advance.
Yeah, there's plenty of space.
Is there a piece of Icelandic music or music of any kind that I can use as part of the interview, just in the background here and there?
I have to think about it. Yeah. Like folk music sounds?
It can be, but it can be. The Icelandic music scene is pretty diverse, so it can be.
It is very diverse.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then Asgeir. Yeah. Asgeir is from rural Iceland, from the northwest.
Asgeir.
It's A-S-G-E-I-R. Asgeir, he's from a very small village in North Iceland, and he could be a very good candidate for something that has to do with rural.
Okay, which community is he from?
He is from Húnaþing Vestra.
Okay.
It's a municipality that has amalgamated for a large part of northwest Iceland. It's to the west of Akureyri.
Although the wind is blowing and the gloom is in the air, out where the ocean meets the northern hemisphere, and in the cold of winter, stormy winds across the unrefined frontier keep blowing back whatever they can find up there. Our gold is drifting carefully and flows with all you care. You are watching over me somewhere.
Suggestion of my guest, Hjalti Johansson, that was Asgeir, and a song called Trust. Our conversation was quite wide-ranging. Agriculture, food, and rural are intimately connected. And increasingly, municipalities are trying to find their voice when it comes to food production. So I wanted to ask him more about how municipalities are organized in Iceland. We cover some rather familiar topics. Taxation, amalgamation, regional cooperation. Who knows? Maybe we could borrow some ideas from each other.
You have a slightly different municipal system than we do. Are your municipalities are very large as well, geographically sometimes, are they? Because you've got a lot of territory.
Yeah, sometimes. But we have municipalities that have amalgamated over very large parts of the country, several smaller municipalities that have joined together. But in other places, and sometimes next to these big ones, there are maybe tiny municipalities with only less than 50 people or so. And some of them are very remote, and it's not illogical to join them with neighboring municipalities.
Yeah. Did the municipalities join by their own choice, or were there some pressures?
Yeah, well, that's mandatory. You have to vote on this in each municipality if it's to merge with another one. And that has been the main obstacle, because the government and the Association of Municipalities in Iceland, they have actually had the policy of joining municipalities, but the small ones, they don't want to adhere to this policy.
Right. One thing I found interesting in Akureyri is that part of the municipality is, I forget the name of the island up.
So there are two islands. One is in the fjord called Trisey, and there live just over 100 persons, and the other one is Grímsey. It's 40 kilometers north of Iceland, and very few live there. It's very different between summer and winter, and the registered number is somewhat higher than the actual number, less than 50 people anyway.
But it's still a part of Akureyri, so...
Yeah, it merged with Akureyri some years ago, so 10 years ago or so. These two previous municipalities, they were actually struggling with financial difficulties. That is very often the reason behind the merging.
Does the larger municipality, like Akureyri in this case, do they get to vote on it as well? If a small...
Oh, yes.
Yes, yeah.
Oh, yes.
What's the source of some funding for municipalities? Because I think that's slightly different as well.
The main source of income is certain... share of the wage tax.
Income tax.
And also there's property tax, and there's also a special fund that evens out the costs and the income of municipalities.
Okay, like we call it, we have an equalization plan in Canada for the different provinces. Yeah. Okay, you have that for municipalities.
Yeah, that's the name in Iceland, if you translate it directly.
What share of income tax do municipalities get?
It's around 14-15%, I think.
Okay, so that gives them some flexibility rather than just relying on property tax, I guess.
Oh, yes. Yeah. And the property taxes and also the income taxes, they are not free to have them very low or very high, so there's a certain level that you have to be between. There are some municipalities that are not willing to merge because they have a special source of income. Maybe, for example, municipalities where there is a hydropower station or something big located, and they get all the taxes from the building.
There's no incentive for them to lose that.
And they have the income tax then as low as possible, so they're kind of tax havens in that sense.
Even within the country. One other thing I found interesting was that the mayor was hired as opposed to being an elected official, is that?
In some cases, the manager, so to speak, of the municipality is hired, and sometimes it's a person that is the head of a party.
And you have a party system within municipalities as well.
Yeah, but it's not as rigid as for the parliament. It's very often cooperation between similar parties on the right or the left side of the politics.
And you have much more experience with coalition governments than we do, probably. You're not afraid of them.
Yeah. No, not really. We have to do it out of necessity because there are so many parties.
Well, Helti, thanks for taking some time out and chatting a bit about rural Iceland.
Not a problem.
It's got a lot of similarities. Well, I always said Cornerbrook is very similar to Akureyri, same size, some of the same issues.
Yeah.
Thanks and all the best.
Yeah, thank you, Ivan. Have a nice weekend.
Yeah, you too.
I hope you enjoyed our brief visit to Iceland today. We'll be back there again later this season. And by the way, as of Saturday, the 3rd of July, 2021, the country plans to end all of its COVID-19 restrictions. If you've been vaccinated, make your reservations before the hip bistros and geothermal spas fill up once again.
We have had chefs building greenhouses and the restaurant managers, bookkeepers, and everyone has been helping out. And it has actually made our team of staff much closer.
Unemployment, it's very high, and even higher than it was in the credit crisis.
This, of course, has given people time to think what they can do better and how to improve.
Yeah, last summer was very busy. This was noticed primarily in rural Iceland because all this population in the southwest, they went to visit other places.
This has been Fit to Eat, the Newfoundland and Labrador Farm and Food Show. To listen to other episodes of the show or for more information, go to fittoeatnl.ca. The songs for today's show were A Springa Sandy by Helgi Hermansen, Herman Inge Hermansen, and Smari Egertsen, and Trust by Asgeir, Icelandic artists all. The theme music, Cluckold Hen, was performed this week by Steve Bauman from America. This is a production of Kitchen Table Communications. I'm Ivan Emke. Join me again next time. I'll be right here. Happy trails.
Everyone was baking their own sourdough bread.
Right.
Yeah, there's plenty of space.